Good evening, and welcome to the special festive edition of the MGEV's Community Podcast, streaming live on Monday, the 9th of December, 2024. We're here to discuss MGEVs, hoping to inform and entertain you for up to an hour. I'm Tom Sedge, T Sedge on the forum. I live in Paignton in Devon, and I'm currently driving the MG4 you see in the picture behind me. And joining us this week are from South London, Leo Mindell.
Hi there, Tom. Hi, everybody. I'm Leo Mindell. I drive a MG5 pre-facelift at the moment, and then also a Cyberster.
Fantastic. Good to see you, Leo. And also from Chorley Group MG, the Innovation Development Manager, Miles Roberts. Welcome, Miles.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Miles Roberts, CG on the forum.
Are you driving any MGs at the moment, Miles?
Not currently, no. I mean, a Hyundai Ioniq 5, which I've been in
Ah.
since April. I've done about 13,000 miles in that. And I mean, I was in a Cyberster for a week or two here or there, you know. I don't know if I can get my hands on one, I do try and drive one. But no, day to day, it's the Ioniq.
Any plans to get one to replace your Ioniq?
Well, the Ioniq's on a 2-year lease, so it won't go back till April 26. So I'm kind of stuck with
You've
that one
got
for
some
now.
time yet. Okie dokie. Right. Well, welcome, folks. If you're watching live, thank you. And please tell us when where you are joining from in the comments window. And please add your questions and comments for the panel and click the like button. If you're watching later, thank you for choosing to watch this video. And please subscribe to get a notification when we go live next time. Many thanks to our premium members, Rick M1, Sloucher, MGBGT2ZS, Very Fat Bloke, EVCOG, Whiskery, Lager Baloo, and Big Bear. If you like what we do at MGEVs, please support us by becoming a premium member. So tonight's podcast, we're going to have a look back at 2024, and then we're going to look ahead to what's coming in 2025. So starting 2024, I think it's not in chronological order, but let's talk a little bit about the Cyberster launch. That was one of the big pieces of news. What did you think, folks? What do you think as a Cyberster owner? I'm sure you have opinions, Leo. Do you think it was a good launch? Do you think it was exciting? What were your impressions?
I think when it launched, when we finally got there, it was great, in a lot of reasons. It took an incredible amount of time for various different reasons that have been said in the past. It got delayed. We had issues on it. You always could feel the cars sitting in the port in Bristol, and we couldn't get hold of them. They did certain things to make sure that the cars passed. So a good thing was they got che they changed the head parts, so there was a noise baffler, a baffler behind the seats. So which just seemed to take forever. However, once it arrived, it didn't disappoint. It's great. It's a great car to drive, especially once you find little tweaks and things that are not in the user's manual to solve problems that were reported in various different press magazines. It's really good. It's really good.
Fantastic. And what did you make of it, Miles? It was a good launch from your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, it was a standard MG, slightly frustrating launch where, we've got people who want the cars, expect the cars. We get told that they're coming in, July, then August, then ended up being sort of September, October by the time they actually got through to us. So that was frustrating because I think that, there was a lot of pent-up demand. We'd first shown the car with the Turner twins from China back in, I think it was October last year. So for us to go like sort of 12 months from taking those sort of £99 early initial deposit holder things, to going to actually taking the car was a long time. It's fortunate we had a little bit of a, nice weather later on in the year that's actually meant people have been able to have the roofs down still even in October. But I think the car's great, and it shows a real improvement in MG's build quality, in their design, in their manufacturing processes. And the software's a bit better as well. So I think, whilst it's not perfect, I think that it shows an awful lot of improvements over previous vehicles.
I sense a
Yeah,
little
I think that's an
different point of view
interesting,
there, Leo.
yeah,
Are
that's an interesting
you agreeing
comment
with
about the
that?
software. I definitely think it's got a lot more features. I'm not saying that those features are necessarily of any use or are what you actually need. Telling me what the weather is and asking me to drive safely is a very nice feature, when you do it once. every single day that you get into it, I really don't want to hear it ever again. Is it a great feature? No. There's lots and lots of stuff there where someone's filled menu upon menu telling you where your nearest dealer is, where you can test drive the car. I don't know why I want a menu to tell me where I can test drive a car when I'm already in it. It seems to be a bit weird. But they're definitely, like most products that are released today, the software is always the thing that they should and can update. What we are very hoping for is that there will be updates. And I think that's the big thing. This car will live or die if they actually do what everybody else does these days and update the software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I meant to that. We're all looking forward to more and improved updates for all the models. Okay, so Cyberster launch was good. Have we had any idea on sales, Miles? Do you know if it's met any expectations for MG UK or exceeded
them? I haven't got the sales figures this year as yet. I think they were still fairly happy with how the order take had gone. When I spoke to them back in October, they said that, you know, the initial pre-orders, it all seemed sold through. There doesn't seem to be much free stock around. We've got a handful still in stock from a couple of people who were unable to progress with their orders when the car actually finally arrived. The problem as well with having, you know, such a long lead time between initial orders and actually deliveries happening is that, you know, people's financial circumstances change or their requirements change things. And so we had a couple of cars. We've got, I think we've got three or four cars in group now out of about 50 or 60 pre-orders, which are unsold. So if anyone's after a Cyberster, Chorley Group is where you can go and get your hands on one, and you can have one in next week. Nice Christmas present for yourself.
Well, there we go. Yes, it's just time to get it all wrapped up. Okay, let's move on from the Cyberster and talk about the one of the surprises for me in terms of how good the replacement car is viewed, although I've yet to drive one, has been the MG3 Hybrid Plus, which launched early in the year. How's it been going generally with that, Miles? Are customers responding well?
Yeah, it's been selling really, really well, actually. And those people who have test driven it versus the competition, I mean, like things like the Toyota Aygo or Yaris, you know, that sort of size car, or the you know, the various cars from, you know, Honda or any other sort of small city, you know, hybrid cars. This one does drive a lot better. It does have a lot more power than a lot of those, because it's, you know, it's 200 horsepower rather than sort of 130 that you find in Toyota, and that makes a big difference in the drivability of it. But even when you compare it against things like the Hyundai i10, which is, or i20, which are, you know, similar sort of cost prices, but not hybrids, it does drive better than those automatic cars as well. So the same system has been used in the new ZS Hybrid Plus. So I drove that and did a review of that fairly recently. Again, it drives really well. I think the thing when you're driving these cars is it's not an EV, but if you haven't driven an EV before and you'd only ever driven petrol cars and then you drove that, I honestly don't think that you would find a bad thing to say about it. If you drove a Toyota Prius or something similar like that, they drive weird because they've got the ECVT gearbox and they feel, you know, there can be a sort of disconnect between what the engine's doing and what it's doing on the road, and, you know, it revs at strange times and things like that. And it generally feels a bit woolly to drive. The MGs seem to have done with their Hybrid Plus system. It's got a 3-speed gearbox, but you would never know. It genuinely feels like it's got an 8-speed box in there, and that's because the electric motor does so much of the heavy lifting that it's roughly sort of,
you've got such attractive range with the electric motor, haven't you?
So the electric motor is actually
a far wider rev band than you'd have with an ICE car.
And with the electric motor providing you know, the majority of the power in that car rather than a lot of hybrids, you know, it's like a, I don't know, 100 brake horsepower petrol and then a 30 brake horsepower electric motor, and so the electric motor just sort of fills in. With the Hybrid Plus system, it's more electric more of the time, and so it does do more of its power comes from the electric motor operating in series with the, or parallel with the engine. So it does genuinely drive pretty damn well. I mean, I'm an EV convert, you know this, but I think that for the price point, I mean, that's what, 20,000 pounds up to sort of 21, and then the new ZS Hybrid's like 21,995 to 23. So it's, you know, it's really competitively priced.
Can I ask Miles on that that sort of car. One of the places I could see that being very successful is in the hire market. That sort of or the fleet market, where it's been very difficult, I think. When I hire a car, it's very rare that I want to hire a car abroad and I want to hire an electric because you're just not sure where you are. And this sort of, it seems to be that middle road to get people between pure petrol and something that will be a hybrid.
Yeah, and I think that it's I think like I say, I think that the hire market, traditionally they've been thinking, well, we'll just continue with our normal petrol manual cars because they're cheaper to buy and everything else. And most people, when they're selecting a cheap car, assume that they're going to get a manual anyway. But increasingly, when you see the switch to EV happening, people do prefer driving automatics now. And I mean, obviously, the American market's always wanted automatics.
And I found indeed when I've been on hold out 2 years running now in France, I've had an EV hire car. I had a Fiat 500e, and then I had a MG4, MG4 SE. That was this year. And in both cases, they were much cheaper. They were by far the cheapest option to hire. And the reason I think is partly they're cheap to buy, but also because, as you say, Leo, when they go on holiday, most people want something they know. They're not inclined to try an EV
Yeah,
unless they
and
know
they've
about
also,
EV. And they'd be
there
worried
was
about
also some,
charging abroad and all that. Oh.
well, in America, this has been a bit, a lot of people have been stung in America where they've been turning around to say you have to return the car fully loaded, 100%
Well,
fuel.
in my case, didn't have to do that. I had a flat £8, I think I paid with the Fiat, and then this year they just said we don't care, it's so cheap to top it up.
In
So the
America, or where were you?
this was in France,
Oh,
MG4,
yeah, I was going to say,
I could
in France, they
they didn't
turn around
care.
and they say, as long as you're above
No,
80%, they don't mind.
I
But
mean
in
this year they
America,
said not,
it's in
this
America
year
they've had a
didn't even
problem.
have that this year. I had, say, it was an €8 charge, irrespective of what you hadn't used 2 years ago, and then this year it was. They said there is, we don't care. It costs us almost nothing to fill this up. So, one of the benefits of hiring an EV is you don't have to fill it up before you go back at the moment. Yeah, it may well be different in America, different
Yeah,
EV
America
market.
is country by country, but it's a nice looking car. It's a nice, as you say, Miles. It fits into a certain marketplace,
Yeah, and then we've got the new
and it's
HS
going
as
to move
well, which
people
has got.
across.
We've got a new HS as well, which has got a similar sort of, front end and everything, and your whole facelift on it. In fact, it's a new car; it's a completely different car to the
So
old
let's
version. And
talk. Let's get it clear in my mind. So we've talked about the MG3. So you've mentioned the ZS hybrid.
yeah, so the
Let's just
ZS.
so people are
So,
clear which is which.
okay, so the ZS Hybrid Plus. So obviously, the ZS previously was split between the ZS Petrol and the ZS Petrol Auto, and then the ZS EV. And they're all basically the same chassis underneath. So with the new ZS Hybrid Plus, it's moved away. So the ZS Hybrid Plus is a completely different chassis, body style, body shell, everything to what the new ZS EV will be. The underpinnings have changed, which basically means it's got a longer wheelbase. It's got quite a lot of extra leg room in the back compared to the old model. The boot is the same, I think, or 10, 15, or 5 litres, something different. It's not, hardly anything different. So it's still a very practical size family car. It's a lot massive upgrade internally in terms of quality and things. But the ZS EV, which people, if they've been looking at Auto Trader recently, will have noticed there's quite a lot of offers on the new ZS EV, as in like pre-registration or new car offers, where they're sort of saving 4, 5, 6 thousand pounds on the list price. And that's because MG is looking at clearing those out because there is going to be a new version of the ZS EV going forward.
Right, and the ZS Hybrid Plus has already launched, hasn't it? It was again
Yeah,
this
that's
year.
how it came out a month or two ago. And the HS has come out as a petrol and also as a plug-in hybrid. So the new HS looks different as well, looks similar to the ZS there, so new headlights and everything.
It's a bigger car, isn't it? The HS.
The H is a bigger car. It's like the Z, it's always difficult to compare because the ZS is bigger than a Duke, but not quite the size of a Qashqai, and the HS is bigger than a Qashqai, but not quite the size of an X-Trail. So it's sort of sitting in slightly different groupings to traditional sort of what we see on the British roads. But The new ZS Hybrid is closer to a Qashqai size, and the
Hmm.
new HS is slightly bigger than Qashqai.
Okay. So we got some good new launches of MGs this year. Now, one of the other things that happened was we had a survey. There were two surveys. There was one of dealers and their opinions of MG, what it was like to be a dealer with the MG network, and also a consumer survey of reliability. I believe that one was What Car, which came out more recently. And in both cases, MG were, well, frankly, at the bottom for the quality of support and experience. So, what are our thoughts on that and how that could change and improve as it goes forward? And have you seen any signs of change, either in the dealer side or customer
So
side?
there have been some changes made in the autumn with MG, the way that they're addressing the after sales part of the dealer network. And hopefully, by the start of next year, we'll start to see some of those improvements taking place. Some of which is more training, some of which is better parts availability, different call center availability for the internal staff and things. But part of it also, I think it still needs addressing. And it's part of the reason, I think, for the low consumer satisfaction with reliability is that. But one of those things is, did your car have to go back into the dealership after you purchased it for software updates or whatever? And almost 90% of people go, yes, they do. Because MG, not sure how I should put this. So MG don't pay for the technician's time to do software updates at PDI. So what you tend to
Oh, a
find,
PDI.
therefore,
Oh, wow.
yeah.
Okay.
So
I
what you tend
assume
to
they did
find,
pay for PDI.
they don't pay
Can
for
you
enough
just
time
tell
to
everybody what PDI is?
Yeah, we
It's
should be clear. Yeah.
pre-delivery inspection. So when the car comes off a transporter, it goes into the workshop and they do software. Well, they're supposed to basically make sure that all the wheels are bolted on, make sure everything's been put together properly at the factory, and check everything works on the car. But sometimes, if there's a software update that needs doing to a car on PDI. Well, should I say, if the car was supplied, because some of these cars obviously made in China and all the cars made in China, but if they were made in China and they've spent, 2 months on the water or so getting across, it could be that there's a different version of software available now than what there was when it was built. If the MG dealer does the software update to that car at PDI, they don't get paid any extra time for that it's taken them to actually do that software update. If, however, the customer records a complaint when they bring the car in and it needs a software update to fix that, that's classed as a warranty repair and the dealer gets paid their time.
I was
So
aware of
if you
that bit. Yeah. So you're
so if
saying
you're
that that would explain why some people are not getting brand new cars delivered with the latest software. So that presumably the dealer's not being
yeah,
paid.
but
They've decided not to do the update.
it also explains as to why they've got such a poor reliability rating, because every car's coming back into the
Is it
workshop
going to go
for software
back?
updates a week or two later, just purely for the benefit of payment for the dealership. So
So
that's something which they ought to sort, because it's
yeah,
got,
I
if
want to. I
it,
want to talk to it from a consumer perspective of actually
oh, it's
using
horrible.
and Well, I'm going to compare this to I've had other EV cars, other cars, other brands. We are in an environment these days where people expect to update their equipment. If it's got a screen on it, you expect the first thing you need to do when you plug it in is it needs to update. It just is the way. And when you come across something that you've spent this much money on that doesn't do that, it becomes quite irksome. And to me particularly, I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure I'm not the only Cyberster owner who has gone in and gone over the air update, bang, you bang it every few days, and it never, ever, 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 it takes 5 minutes to connect, or it says it's connected and says no update. So that to me means either it can't connect, or there's no service for it to connect to because it should know instantly or within 20, 30 seconds, or they just haven't done it yet. They just haven't got round to it. And you can feel, and particularly in the forums, you see people saying different problems and different versions, and that's just madness. It really, from a consumer perspective, everybody's on the same version of software, it's much, much easier to support the same version of software, because then you can get a you've got a problem, get all of you go onto the same version, and then you're done. And then we know what the problem is. When you leave many, many old versions out there, it just makes the problem worse. It makes the problem worse. And it's something that I think, if you said to me one thing, and it can't be fixed at the dealer, it shouldn't be fixed at the dealer, it needs to be fixed somewhere that actually says that we will now take responsibility to do software updates, and this is how you do it.
Yeah, I agree. And I've had my car nearly 2 years. I've had 8 visits, and I've had several hardware faults that had to be fixed and software faults. And one time I had to go back 4 times when I had the CCU failure, and it wouldn't AC charge. And a lot of those repeats were for software updates, or then the software updates didn't apply properly, so I had to go back in to have them applied properly. So that, I wouldn't say it's all software, but that would certainly, improving that would make a huge difference. I do have a fairly early car, so that's probably why I've seen some hardware problems like I have. But yeah.
But the so thing with that, Tom, is even though you have a fairly early car, you know, even the modules, it is modular. I mean, and one of the things I must be, you know, be clear why, you know, when we talk about why they're taking out ranges and they're doing things, is they're building cars using similar components, which does make a lot of sense. So that's where I don't know exactly, and maybe Miles can exactly explain, a lot of the cars you've just talked about, the new ones, are going to be on a similar framework, I assume, or a platform. Is that the right term, Miles? Mm-hmm. And once you share that, then, you know, there's a million of these things, or 2 million, or 5 million, but you've got to be able to fix these problems and make it so that even if you're an early adopter or a first purchaser, it's your first customer. You know, you don't want to be the one to be abandoned on the side of the road.
That. I mean, what I was saying was, I did expect that. I mean, I knew it was a brand new platform. I knew it was, an early car on that platform, the first car on that platform, and it was an early build of that car. And I've always had, whenever I've done that with a new car, I've always had something. So I expected some teething problems. And actually, the car has never let me down. It's never stranded me anywhere or anything like that. But it's not the fact that I've had problems. It's the fact that it's taken repeat visits, and a lot of it has been software limited. Plus, with all the ability to talk to the car remotely with the app, the onboard 4G, I mean, remote diagnostics. I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful if I could through the app text my dealer, and the dealer could run some tests remotely and tell me whether I need to come in or not, or whether they can give me an update. I mean, this is what other makes are doing, building on the back of the telematics that exists, and the connection to the car, and that would also save a lot of costs, a lot of time, a lot of hassle booking back into dealers. So. And the car was sold as being capable of doing this, at least for the infotainment, and so have other MGs. So it'd be great if they actually turned that on and started to make it more automated. But yeah, I think a lot of it's the financial model, and it makes sort of sense because MG came from this very low cost background. As they're trying to go up market and make more premium cars like the Cyberster, and you know, compete. They already compete on a good drive, but they want to compete on the quality. Well, that's got to extend to the software as well as the hardware. So it'd be brilliant if they adjusted the model in a way that meant that your dealer could go out of their way to help you and keep you as a long-term customer. That's what I would say. All right. Anything else from 2024 that we'd like to talk about as a highlight?
No, but I do want to just quickly comment. There was a couple of comments on our live stream from Barry, who said Tesla solved this years ago, several times a month unprompted, to that a software update has to download and is available to update now or in the schedule. So, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. And Bernie was saying, I'm afraid to say that unless MG can support automatic software updates, my next car will not be an MG. And he also asks, are there servers behind a firewall? But we won't go into that side of it. I think, you know, you're hearing from one owner and one dealer. I think two owners. This is the biggie that we would, you know, I would say it's the biggest single thing. That's the biggest single thing I have.
In terms of, Scott asked a question on why can they sell the MG4 for under £20,000 GBP in Australia. It'll partly be the geographical closeness. It'll be cheaper to ship there. And it'll partly be to do with what price you're talking about, because there's a before the road, on the road price, there's an on the road price in Australia with taxes, and before the road before on the road prices as well. And so that will also be part of it. Plus the steep discounts on the MG4 at the moment, I understand, miles generally.
Yeah, I mean, we're able to sell in the UK the MG4 for like £5,000 cheaper than was the RRP. So there is a push, and part of this obviously is to do with the ZEV mandates, so and you know the emissions targets and things. So in the UK, there is incentive for brands such as MG to register more EVs to get above that 22% saturation point in the UK that's required this year. MG is ideally going to try and sell more than that. I think they're currently tracking at 27% or so EVs. That means that they've got spare credits that they can sell to manufacturers who are not hitting that target. And that therefore effectively subsidizes their car cost. So they've done that for a few years with other like Tesla were doing it in America. They were used to get like sort of £5,000 per credit that they could sell to Ford or GM, which effectively means that you know they've made an extra £5,000 profit on each car they're selling, or they can sort of reduce price and sell more of them, so to get market foothold. So yeah, this ZEV mandate that there's currently in the UK is having a distorting effect on some of these things. So yeah, that's why MG are well, MG are selling off the ZS EV quite cheap at the moment because of obviously it's the end of line, and the MG4 they're doing it because it's well, it's a volume car that they can
And
make easily.
good deals on the five, Leo, right? I understand you've purchased a new one.
So I've actually swapped my pre-facelift for a facelift, which I'm going to be getting later this week. On the basis that I really like five. It does. I know I can understand where it didn't fit for some people, and they're saying, but to me, I always want. Did a you know I like the fact that it's an estate car. I like it. It fits in exactly what I need. I can throw in all of my equipment where I'm going somewhere. But the prices that they're doing the facelift one are just it's just not worth arguing. They're taking I'm paying nothing, not quite nothing, but I'm swapping one for the other and I'm very happy.
Right. So
So
good deals
that's
out there,
it.
folks, if you're thinking of a
It
change.
is. It is. It's a bit of a shame in a way, but they fixed everything they could do to fix on it for
Yeah.
that. Although I don't think it's got over the air. I don't think it ever had over the air on that one, did it,
No.
Miles?
No.
No. Had real lights in the new facelift one. It's got real lights, I think, in the handles on the rest. That was something to look forward to. It's a nice car, the MG5, and I had one for well for a couple of years now, and I really liked it. I thought it was a really practical car. I had a roof bar, I had a roof box of roof bars on it and everything. You know, I used it as a family hauling thing. Went camp, you know, went on a holiday with it, camping on it and everything. I think it does do everything very well. MG internally have decided that they're going to stop selling the MG5, which is why they're sort of again running out the end of the production on these. At the moment, they're not looking at replacing it directly because the sales this year have been quite a lot lower than they were previously. I think it was distorted in 2020, 2021 by companies like Uber were buying loads of them for London taxi type things and private hire. And a lot of that was thought to be because it was the size of the vehicle. It was the first EV estate car. But since the MG4 came out, it seems that an awful lot of people just went, actually, I can manage with a hatchback. So they went for the MG4 instead because the price point was, well, on the recommended retail price, you got more for your money with the MG4. But I think that the MG5, the price they're currently doing at is a storming deal, and I think it drives really well. It's a nice, comfy, you know, not the most exciting car in the world, but I think it, you know, it does a lot of stuff and you know, and satisfies those family duties really nicely.
Yeah, it's a great car, I think. So let's talk it, move us into 2025 then, looking ahead. So originally, Miles, there was talk of an MG4 estate to become, this was way back, months back, maybe even last year. That would an estate variant of the MG4 would come at some point to replace the MG5. That was one rumor. Have you
Yeah, that
heard
was
any
talked
more
about in
about that?
Auto Car and Auto Express. We haven't We haven't seen anything this side about that coming yet. So my understanding is it won't be coming in the first half of 2025 at least.
Okay, so not soon, if anybody's wondering, if they're holding off on a five purchase because they think a new one is about around the corner. Now, also, there's talk of the ES5, or at least the replacement of the ZS EV. That's what people are calling it, the ES5 at the moment. Now, what do we know about that? Have we got any more information about when that's coming and what it might cost? And
No, it's the MG ES5. Yep, that's a spy shot of it there. There's been quite a lot of photos placed online recently. Auto Express did an article on it in the last week or two about the MG ES5 as well. It's a ZS EV replacement. It might not be called the ES5 when it comes to the UK, but effectively that is going to be what they're launching as the replacement for the ZS EV. So it's roughly a similar sort of size. It's based on the MG4 platform, so it's rear-wheel drive. There may be the option of putting all-wheel drive in the future, but I don't think that'll be available from launch. I don't think they're going to make an MG, like an ES5X power, should we say?
And I
But
think
they're going.
there are some pretty if I might be wrong about this, I've heard it's launching in Australia before the UK. Is that right? And that's over there. There's some people might have seen some videos of some closer to production or pre-production versions out there.
My understanding is that the S5 goes into production for UK market in January, and we should see pricing in February.
Okay,
So,
cool.
and it'll probably be in showrooms by sort of April, I think. So, it's sort of that sort of timescale. So there's the S5. It's going to be similar sort of size because it's based on the MG4 platform. It's going to have similar sort of size battery packs available, I imagine. So, probably like a standard range and a long range, but. We should get a lot more information in the new year on that one because obviously they're going to launch pricing on things very
We'd
early on.
expect an updated interior similar to the other MGs we've seen. I would imagine a higher quality.
Yeah, a couple of big touch screens and a big touch screen and a big driver's display. The photos for the ES5 will basically look the same as what we see in the UK.
What can people expect with the four? Because it's been out for a while now, and there's been talk of a refresh, and then it went very quiet. And
I think
so
there's a.
half the people are hoping for some major, reskinning and upgrading, and others thinking it's just going to be a minor bump. What do we think is likely? What do we know?
My understanding is that there's going to be a mid-cycle enhancement with a slightly different interior in terms of a bigger nav display. Most of it's going to basically stay the same. So externally it's going to look the same. Internally it's going to look the same, but perhaps slightly bigger. And I suppose they've already done a slight tweak on it because they added things like the middle headrest and the rear wash wiper. They've already made a sort of mid-cycle enhancement in that case. But yeah, that's all we're expecting at the moment, the MG4. There's no news, certainly, again, not within the next 6 months.
So we'll have to wait and see for that, but maybe people shouldn't get their hopes up. And if you are thinking of replacing or renewing or getting an MG4 for the first time, again, there's some really good deals around.
Yeah, I think that at the moment there's, I'd say probably the cheapest time to buy an MG4 right is probably right now because I think that
Well below list, aren't they? Yeah, for
well
all
below
models.
list,
And then we got in the chat, we've got Barry saying that does sound as if the ES5 will cover off the MG5. Is that what you think? That's they'll view that as the replacement, even though it's different, it's an SUV, not an
Well, it's not.
estate.
Yeah, it's a crossover SUV. I think if you look at what other car manufacturers, are doing with their product lineups, I think that the ES5 being a crossover is likely to have more appeal than the more general appeal than an MG5 would, and I think that. So it probably will. If people are wanting something a little bit bigger than MG4, then the MG ES5, whatever they call it, is going to be probably ticking that box for them.
I think from my perspective, you mentioned it before that there is a quite a big market, particularly here in London, for the Uber driver, etc. And these cars do fit into those areas for people. Bigger space, as you say, just to get in and out. We are moving very fast in London in respect to the fact that, that the Uber, that the cars of choice for mini cabs or whatever, etc., is electric. So I'm not surprised, or the hybrid, so I can see this is going to be attractive.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I would like to have the choice of an estate. I've never been keen on SUVs. I have owned one, had a Qashqai. I just find they all look, to me, they all look a similar shape, and they're not an appealing shape. I know that get that you've got lots of, in the old days, the argument used to be you had lots of headroom, but of course, in all EVs, you have masses of headroom now. So you don't all room in the back, and you don't really have that advantage over an estate car or a hatchback. So I think there's probably a fair market for an estate, as was proved when the MG5 came out. But yeah, maybe the high sales, as Miles talked about, misled MG as to the popularity they could expect with it, the production levels they could sell in the UK.
You know what I think? I think that the world has gotten this big sort of rush towards crossovers and SUVs, and I
I'd
really, really
agree.
miss cars like the Espace, the Mégane Scénic. Those
The
sort of
people
seven
carrier.
seat family, yeah, the Zafira, those seven seat buses that you could fold all the seats down and fit like three bikes in the back of them, or you could, go to IKEA and fit your new kitchen in the back of it, or you could take, your family and grandma and granddad placed in it. And instead, if you want to have seven seats, you've got to have something which is, 2.5 tons and 5 meters long and got a Land Rover badge on it, pretty much. It's got 70 grand plus.
There's lots of Toyotas in London like that. Toyotas have those wagons that a lot of people buy.
I think that those sort of those MPVs, they're not cool, but they're
So they
really,
did sell. They
really,
sold really well.
yeah.
I mean, yeah, they were. I used to see loads of them, right?
Well, I had a Grand
A
Scenic, I had
Multipla,
an
I
Orsa,
remember, was
yeah.
the well, Fiat
Well,
Multipla was
multiple,
the really hideous
felt
looking, but it sold.
distinctive,
Six
distinctive.
people, seating for six.
Yeah, one thing that I would like to see this next year, but according to an article in Auto Express, we're unlikely to, is the GTS, the Cyber GTS, the 2+2. So I really like the look of that one that was at Goodwood. We should have mentioned this, of course. Yeah, last year was, well, this year was MG's 100th anniversary, and so they were the big feature at Goodwood Festival of Speed this year. They had a big stand at Geneva as well. The Cyber GTS, I thought, looked really, really cool as a 2+2. And I mean, 2+2 cars are inherently really awkward for anyone above any more than two people. But they do just give you that flexibility that if you want to give your mate a lift back from the pub, or pick up an extra child from school, you can do it without having to bungee cord them to the roof. So I think that a 2+2, is a, that looks nice, doesn't it?
That's
I
good
really
looking.
like the shape of that. I think it's a good looking car, and I mean, arguably more practical for the UK because it's a solid roof rather than a set of ragtop. But the, yeah, David Allison said in an article with Auto Express or Autocar this last week that he didn't see it coming, because he thought that it wouldn't have enough of a market here. But I just think
Enough
it's so
sales.
pretty.
Do
It's
you think?
pretty.
I think it's really pretty too, and it'd be great if they built it. But do you think that they're pulling back because of the tariffs in Europe and US market? And you think they're sort of pulling it back on new models because they're trying to gauge how much they can invest in, what production runs they can do. I think if that's
I
part
think
of it
that,
or not.
I mean, it is always harder for UK market because there's only us in Australia, and India that use right hand drive cars, really, isn't it,
And
in terms of
Ireland.
volume, and Ireland, in terms of volume, So, and so you are automatically limiting, I suppose, what you can get, and that's why we never got the Marvel R here in the UK, is because the cost of tooling up didn't seem like it was going to be viable, I am assured that within the next 6 months, we should be seeing a Marvelari type sort of SUV electric car coming to the UK.
Oh, okay, that's exciting. That's the first I've heard of that. Okay. Oh, I have to look forward to that. And
Yeah,
do
that's
you
probably
have
going to
you
be sort
heard
of
any?
late spring, early summer.
Right. And have you heard any more about the IM Intelligent Mobility brand? Because previously, for those who didn't see our podcast a few months back, that's a new SAIC EV high-end brand with a whole range of cars shown at various shows like Shanghai, but very
Yeah,
quiet ever
Geneva as
since then.
well, yeah. Yeah, so I am, and I am, there's an article, again, there's an article called Auto Express where someone had said that IM was due to launch cars in the UK. And the argument internally was whether they were going to launch as IM or whether they just launched them as MG and rebadged them, because as all car manufacturers, I think, are learning, and, big companies, particularly Chinese firms, there's quite a few tried to launch in the UK recently. Aura, for example, Great Wall Motors, who have launched new car brands that nobody's ever heard of in the UK before, and they've not sold like the Chinese-built MGs have. And the major reason for that is because the MG badge. If I think if the MG had come back in 2017 and launched as SAIC Motors, they wouldn't have half as many sales as they do today. So I think that
And
that
also the
brand that they've
dealer,
got.
it's the established network of dealers, isn't it? Because the other brands are having to partner with dealer groups or build out new showrooms, or it all takes time to. So you start with two dealers and you go to four, then you go to eight, then you go to 20. And so that, with MG, it's what, about 100 or so anyway?
Yeah, and
So
the thing about 120 now, I think, then they say that they
120.
want to limit around 120. So that was the IM L6 saloon that was at, I'm just seeing on screen now, that was at Geneva in an interesting custard colour with custard and black wheels. Sort of looks like, yeah, I mean,
I like the look of
internal.
that.
Now, the LS6, I think, might be reborn as Marvel R. I think that
Oh,
might be the
wow.
new Marvel R. I haven't seen any pictures of the new largest, C stroke D segment SUV that's due to come
Okay.
in
So we
spring summer,
got
but I
in the chat,
believe
we've got
they're close
James
to
in the
that.
chat saying that the ES5 and Marvel R look similar, the ES5 and the existing Marvel R. So that's that another theory.
Yes, yeah, so I think that IM probably their products are likely to get launched by MG as MG cars, just rebadged, and they probably won't use the LS6 name as well. They'll probably bring it into the more standard MG nomenclature. But I believe that there is, yeah, one sort of high-endish SUV, large sort of HS or bigger car, which to replace the Marvel R in Europe and and obviously be a new segment of the UK.
That would be great. Yeah, it'd be good to see that. Do you think there's any plans for really long range EVs? David's asking in the chat.
Always. I think that, there's always going to be a demand there for more range. I saw an article this last week about the IM with these semi-solid state batteries with 1,000 kilometers of range, sort of 600-ish miles of range. And I think that that's always going to be of interest to people, particularly those who have had the argument of, I need more range. People who haven't made the jump to EV, who have gone, well, I'm not driving an EV until it does a good sort of 500, 600 miles on a charge, and then you sell them one that does 620.
I think my view of this, and I look back at the technology I've been involved in or we've used in the past, like mobile phones, and you look at the fact that we went from a time when it was very limited battery life, and then we went to this super long battery life as the selling point. And then we're now back to somewhere where actually the battery life is something that we've removed as a worry because we've replaced it by the fact that literally everybody plugs their phone in all the time. So you used to say, oh, look, my phone lasts 5 days, and now nobody would even think about seeing if they could last 5 days with a mobile phone. I'm sure there's people who are watching that say yes, they do, but the majority of people have adopted their lifestyle to fit into how the mobile phone works, charging at bedtime, and even to the point that their phone fixes it. So I think I do agree with
Wait,
Miles. This is
that's
a
true,
problem
Leo.
that people want to see
Yeah,
solved,
that's
but it won't just solve by just saying now we've got, because in the minute you come out with a 1,000 kilometer battery, somebody will want a 2,000 kilometer one.
It's certainly true that I think most people don't need that if they have home charging. I think it's possibly a different story if you don't. And depending on how much commuting you do, how long you want to spend, at rapid fast charges, rapid charges. But yeah, it's going to be if it comes, it will come because it's needed in places like Australia and other markets where MG have a presence and want to serve the long distance. But there's a compromise to be paid for, in terms of weight and cost, which, until the
I mean,
technology
there's
is
an argument that
improved,
says that
it's
realistically what we need is not, 300, 400, 500 mile batteries. What everyone really needs is a 150 mile battery that actually genuinely does that, do that all year round. And a lot more charging availability.
Or charge 5 minute charging from 20 to 80 or something.
I think that, it's, I'd really like to see this next year. Is I'd like to see the differential between public charging and home charging cost-wise brought down. So I think that is the biggest barrier that I see
But like
to
taking
uptake.
VAT off public charging or
Yeah,
reducing it.
and you know what? And I'm and just to put it out there, maybe EV charging companies not trying to make quite so much profit per charge and looking at a slightly longer term payback on their investment. Because I think at the moment, I can charge at home for 7 pence, but I can charge on the motorway for 70 pence.
It makes
And
a
I
big
think
difference.
that 10 times differential isn't fair,
I just want to pick up on some more chat questions. So we've had a question about localization of MG4 to more languages. Ukrainian's been mentioned, but there must be others. Do you know anything about efforts in that area, Miles? I think they have added languages over time with software updates to the infotainment.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know if there's going to be any more localizations added. I don't know who, what part of MG adds those. Is in, whether it's done in China, whether it's done locally, and then they load them in Europe, for example. I don't know.
It would
So
be
I
whoever
don't.
it's the distributor to Ukraine, I guess.
Or
If
if
there
they're
is
by, or if it's a
one, or
Ukraine, or if it's
importers.
a, or if it's an a Ukrainian, I don't know if it's a Ukrainian national living in UK, just quite like to
That
have
could
the
well be.
menu in Ukrainian rather than English. I don't know. I will try and ask the question, but I can't promise an answer
Okay,
anytime
thank
soon.
you.
I just don't know if it's done locally or if it's done in.
Also, thanks. That's good. Good. We'll be see what you can find out. Also, it'd be noticeable how many of you said the same thing we were saying, that we need automatic updates. If you've, that you're not going to buy more MGs, and until you see that's come through strongly. We also had some questions earlier around the X Power. We've talked about that before, the X Power vibration. I don't think there's any news on that. Is that fair to say, Miles? There's no change in any
Not that I'm aware of. Let me just double
position.
check.
This is for people experiencing a vibration.
The advice I gave last time still stands as far as I'm aware, but let me just double check. I'll be honest, I haven't checked the anything online for a second. No, there's nothing on that. I'm sorry.
I want to switch gears slightly because one thing that's coming next year, which is not in the exciting new car space, is changes to tax, vehicle excise duty, car tax. And people need to be aware of this, whether you're going to be buying an EV, you've currently got an EV, or you're going to be buying another EV. So we put together a graphic on this, and I'll try and explain, talk you through it. This is the latest data as updated on the government's website on the 24th of November. They could change it before April. But basically, depending on what kind of vehicle you have and when that was first registered, there are different. All sorts of different bands. Now, I'm not going to talk about ICE. So if you've got a petrol or diesel car, it's more complicated because it depends on your emissions. But if you have a hybrid that was first registered before the 1st of April 2017, there is a chart you can look up on the government website, which will tell you, depending on the emissions, how much you'll be paying next year. And you don't have to worry about the expensive car supplement because that was brought in after that date. If you have a hybrid, so say you've got one of the new MG3 Hybrid Plus or ZS Hybrid Plus, and you bought that after the 1st of April 2017, you'll now be paying a flat 195 each year from April 2025 and again in April 2026. Obviously, that's assuming the government doesn't change the bands and the rates again, which they might in a future budget. And also, you'll not be shielded from the expensive car supplement. So, if your hybrid costs more than £40,000, now remember that's the list price, not the price you pay, and that's the list price of all with all options included. Then you'll be paying an additional £410 on top of that 195 for the first 5 years that car is on the road, and then the expensive car supplement disappears. So totally, you'll be spending £605 a year. If you have an older EV between 2001 and the end of March 2017, it's a flat £20. I think it's gone up from £10, but it's flat £20 for next year and the year after. If you have an EV that was between the 1st of April 2017 up until the end of March next year, which is most people who currently, or everybody who currently has an MGEV, for example, you'll be paying £195. That's the latest figure. You might have heard of 180 or £190, but it's they've added every year they increase the number by inflation, so they've added a bit more to it since then. So that will now be £195 a year. But you are exempt from any expensive car supplement. So if you have bought an MGEV that's over £40,000, you won't be paying that. However, from the 1st of April next year, you'll still be paying something for your new EV, your brand new EV. You'll be paying £10 in the first year, and then you'll be paying the £195 from year two onwards. And remember, at the moment, we've not been paying anything, although you should have been technically going onto the government website to say, I've paid my £0 every year to renew your tax. That's important. But from next year, we'll. Brand new and EVs after the 1st of April, they're registered after the 1st of April 2025, it'll be £10 in the first year and then £195 from year two onwards. And with the expensive car supplement, this will apply to EVs for the first time, but the Labour government have tweaked what was going to happen. You will be exempt in your first year, but from year two to year five, so the second, third, fourth, and fifth year, you'll have to pay the £410 supplement, which will be £605 total. Now, if you think these prices are enormous and outrageous, spare a thought for some of the ICE owners. I think, depending on emissions, some of the Land Rover folks are spending thousands of pounds on if they continue to buy highly polluting cars from the 1st of April next year with big engines. So this is a lot less than what some people are paying. What are your thoughts, folks, on this? I hope it's clear. It's pretty. Don't shoot me for the complexity, it's what the rules say. But what are your feelings about this change and what it does to the market, and for people generally?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the difficulty for us as dealers is, again, it's seen as another barrier to switching your older car to one which is EV. You know, if you're currently in a pre-2017 diesel, you might only be paying £20 or £30 a year car tax. Whereas, you know, if you bought a second-hand EV, it's now going to be £195. So I think that's not fair. In that, you know, there should be, if you're putting it up for EVs, you ought to be putting it up for all groups, not just. But then again, I also do appreciate the fact that cars which are over 8 years old are typically driven by people on lower incomes who would be most affected by an increase in car tax rate. So I do sort of, you know, the socialist in me as well does sort of see that aspect and think, well, yeah,
Yeah,
in some ways that's made, you know, that's fairer that, you know, that they're not having to pay a sudden jump like everybody else is. But I think that with EVs, I think it's really unfair as well. You know, if you know what I mean, I think that it's not, it wouldn't be fair to ask someone who bought a car for less than £1,000 to suddenly pay £200 car tax when it was previously £20. But I don't also think that it's
no,
fair to
but.
do that for EVs.
Okay, but if you look at it another way, although I'm just again playing devil's advocate, that person who bought a car for £1,000 is now buying petrol and diesel, which has got petrol and diesel fuel charges on it and tax, and they are probably on their life over a year paying far, far, far more tax than an EV
Yeah, I agree.
driver. And I'm not
I agree. And
saying
I think.
that's I just so you could argue that there's more money being made by the government out of diesel and petrol cars, exceedingly much more money than they're making out of this. Do I think it's fair? I think we're going to move away from this to sort of, in my mind, I think we're going to go to some sort of flat rating across all of this eventually, because they'll be
Well,
pushing in different ways. That's my gut feeling, and
I
I'd be happy
think
to
that
be wrong.
with petrol and diesel cars, obviously pay an awful lot of money in the actual fuel tax, as you're saying. But in some ways, that's a price per mile, isn't it? It's a tax per mile in a way. Whereas, so if you have a, like I've got, I bought an Alfa GTV, like 27 years old, it's a little project car for me and my son to play around with, and that will do probably 1,000 miles in the year, if that. It just depends if we, how far we take it to car shows, but realistically, it's probably, 1,000, 2,000 miles probably max. But the car tax, so in terms of fuel, I'm paying up very little, but the car tax, that is £325 a year, pre-2001. So it's slightly cheaper. If it was the 2001 onwards, it would be something like £450 a year. So I think that there's already sort of, a disincentive to own older cars like that. This, I mean, I've taken that GTV. We had it taxed for November. We've taken it off the road for December, January, February, and probably taxed it again in March because we don't want, we don't save £35 a month effectively by not having it taxed over winter because we're not really going to use it out on the salty, gritty roads anyway. But I think that, that £35 a month could well be more than, some old dear who's got a little shopping car. That could be more than what she's paying in fuel a month. And the tax becomes a higher burden for her.
Yeah, especially for low mileage drivers. Yeah.
So I think that, I think it's right that
I would say,
me having a fourth car in the household does get taxed for having
okay.
a toy
So,
car. I get that, but I think that.
yeah, I would say that this is, whichever way you want to look at it, because we are able to control or people are able to view what a car does much more than it used to. I think we're going to be moving away from what was a very, very blanket, it's this amount of money. They try to start changing it. I think it's going to change. And I'm not great. I really don't want to pay the tax man any more money. However, I can see that if I do 20,000 miles on electric that I charge at home versus somebody who does 20,000 miles because they can't afford an electric and do it in a petrol car, somehow that just doesn't seem in my mind a fair, a fair use of the same facility of the
Yeah,
road.
I can see both points of view. Also, they talk the long term talk is of road pricing and charged by the mile, with the assumption being that either there would be a black box of the car or they would simply at the MOT at the end of the MOT record the mileage you've done and then charge you for the miles done. I mean, some of the pricing on that's been quite that I've heard about has been quite high. People have speculated 15p a mile. Or something like that, which would be a big cost for everybody. So you'd be spending thousands a year, not
You can't
hundreds.
you
But
can't do
that's
it
a
once a
long
year.
term aim. They might
Yeah.
introduce that on
The,
some types of roads. But
okay,
it is about the
so coming
incentive.
back to
So,
this,
yeah.
our point on the bit that we've got at the moment is we're agreeing it's not fair. It's moved in a different direction to not fair, but it's
It
we've
muddies
got to
the
find
incentives.
something.
So with the withdrawal of government incentives completely, which was a couple of years ago now, now you don't get your zero tax on an EV or a hybrid, or a lower tax on the hybrid. It was a bit lower, and then you now. I know that what the government have done is okay. They've said fine, we'll for the expensive car supplement. Now, when that came out in 2017, it was 40,000. It hasn't changed. If you apply inflation, it should be £52,250. So they've responded to that just by exempting the first year for new EVs. So that they on the I think the grounds for that is that that means that the car dealers can't complain that it's going to bump up the price and put people off buying. But it's
I
still
think
a
what you'll
part
find.
of your purchase is thinking about what your costs are going to be
I
ongoing.
think it, I
It's
think in an argument
minimal
is
changes,
also,
really.
I think the cynic in me says that actually by kicking it down the road for a year, I think that they might, because they said in the last budget in November, they said that they were going to do a consultation about this expensive car supplement for EVs. And whether they would change the goalposts specifically for EVs in terms of the price point at which it came in at, so threshold moving from 40 grand to perhaps more, or whether they'd look at the amount that was added in, in terms of the supplement itself, whether it was going to change in value. So they might, by exhibiting it for year one, that might just mean that they have got an extra year to effectively to kind of decide what they're doing with that. So I suspect that could change again.
Yeah, I
A
think
lot of it
that
will better depend on how this
they've
year
said they're
and next year
mulling
pan
it
out with car
over.
sales.
I think the phrase they used was they're prepared to look at the at some of it again, but with no commitment to timescale, and very vaguely. So we'll see. Just in compiling that chart, I don't know if it made a sense to people, but it shows you how complicated it is now. And if you look at the ICE stuff, it's 10 times more complicated because of the different tax bands, CO2 bands, charges depending on the year of the car. You could be forgiven for not being able to work out what you'll actually be charged before you get it. And I think the whole thing should be simplified, but not in a way that penalizes rural drivers or those that have to go, do a lot of miles just because of where they live. I think that would be that's the downside with road pricing, unless you make it by the type of road, so that people who get the better roads pay more for them.
Well, yeah, but then you'll end up with rat running on different roads. Is it every single solution has a different will create another problem.
I suspect they might start with motorway tolls, but we'll see. At
Oh,
least then
so
you can
well,
control it.
that's quite an interesting point on that one because I do quite a bit of driving in Europe, and motorway tolls are common. And now the way that motorway tolls work and the fact that they're all digital, you wouldn't know that you were doing it. So I could see that technology could be expanded, and in a way, you're sort of doing that when you talk about congestion zones and ULEZ and things like that. It's effectively a tolling system.
And final point on this is if you do renew your tax before April, you'll still get a full year at the current £0
Yeah,
that you'll
you
be
don't
asked
need
to
to
pay.
sawn it. Just to make it clear, you don't actually need to sawn your car to be able to re-tax it.
You could
So
just renew early, can't you? Well, I think
you just
if you were
renew
to
it
do
early,
early.
basically. Yes, you just click to renew, and you can actually tax it from that day. So if you in January or February or whatever, or start of March, so you want to renew 1st of March, go, okay, I'm going to renew for a full year. That'll tax you through till end of February next year. One thing we talk about the MG4 facelift. I'm sorry, I completely forgot that a bulletin did come
Okay,
out
go for
about
it.
this. A month or two ago. So the MG4 has had some changes made to it due to something called GSR2, which is General Safety Regulation 2. So the spec changes that have happened is that on the SE standard range, it was previously quoted as a 51 kilowatt hour battery pack. It's now quoted as 49 kilowatt hour battery pack, but the WLTP mileage remains the same at 218 miles. It now comes on the SE standard range with satellite navigation as standard, rear camera as standard, and the active grille system as well as standard. The SE long range, the WLT, the battery stays the same at 64 kilowatt hours, but the battery combined range goes from 281 to 288. It's exactly the same battery, so it's just how they're actually checking it in the lab, I suppose. Sat nav is now included, and rear camera is included on that as well. On the trophy long range at 64 kilowatt hour, the WLTP range has gone from 270 to 279. On the trophy extended range, it's gone from 323 to 329. And on the X Power, it's gone from 239 to 245. So they're all saying they can do slightly more mileage than they could before. The batteries are exactly the same. There's no changes to the batteries. So if you couldn't get 239 miles out of an X Power before, it's not going to happen now. You're not going to get 245. The only other change as well is there's been they've removed some kit. So on the Trophy and X Power, they've removed the mobile phone Bluetooth key option, the auto dimming rear view mirror, and the front and rear electric windows one touch up down. That's been done, I presume. Well, I presume that the rear view mirror and the one touch windows is a cost thing, I presume.
That's a really odd
Or
choice. The one t I mean, a dimming rear view mirror, yeah, that's nice to have, but the one touch is such a common feature for
well,
higher
it was
spec.
all it, it's it was the, they were previously all one touch up and down. Whether it's changed, so it's now just the front
Might just
windows
be
that
the
are one
front
touch.
because, yeah, it is all the way around on mine.
Yeah, but yeah. So that's the only changes that are happening effectively at the end of 2024 with the MG4. Pricing remained the same. We've actually been discounting it since as well. So yeah, so it's exactly the same. Basically, there's just a couple of small tweaks. The SE is slightly better, the trophy is slightly worse.
Okay, thank you. Right, well, our hour has gone and passed, I'm afraid, but I hope that's been informative to people. So, going into next year, don't forget our ongoing poll, which allows you to vote on the topics for the next podcast. That's available on the forums, and you'll find a link in the video description. And you can reply in the podcast thread on the forum in order to ask for things that are not already in the poll. You can find the audio version of this podcast on all good podcast providers. Just search the MGEV's Community Podcast. And that's it for us tonight. Many thanks to all the moderators who help keep our forums running smoothly, Alb, Coulomb, and Rolf. Many thanks to From Stuart to the podcasters who dedicate their time to share their wisdom with the community. My personal thanks to Leo and Miles. Thanks, folks. And if you found this podcast useful, please click on the like button. Also, if you subscribe and click on the notification bell, you'll get notified next time we go live, which is particularly useful if we change the day at the last minute. And so it just remains for the podcast team and the MGEV's admin to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll see you again in January. Bye-bye, folks.
Bye.